Frank Abagnale Jr. is a legendary former con man whose teenage exploits were the subject of Steven Spielberg's 2002 film, Catch Me If You Can. Frank was eventually caught by the FBI after impersonating a doctor, an airline pilot, a lawyer, and numerous other professions. During his misbegotten youth, Frank pioneered the field of check fraud. After serving time, Frank became a consultant for the FBI and now helps private companies and organizations avoid being the victims of fraud and identity theft. During a recent visit to Hawaii, Frank told our producer Ryan Finnerty that the human element is still the most essential element to a good con, but modern technology makes fraud easier to perpetrate.
Crime has become 4,000 times easier than when I did it 50 years ago as a teenager, and that's mainly because of technology. Technology breeds crime. It always has. It always will. So, you know, everything from printing checks. When I printed checks, you needed a Heidelberg printing press. That was a $1 million press. It took 12 months to learn how to operate it. There were color separations, negatives, plates, and typesetting. Today, you open a laptop and you create a check in less than 5 or 10 minutes, and you're able to go down the office supply store and buy secure check paper, and then you're able to print it out on an inkjet printer. So technology has made crime a lot easier, and crime has certainly become a lot more global. So today people are committing crimes from thousands of miles away in China and Malaysia and India and Hong Kong, and to victims that are sitting thousands of miles away from them. So all around, the crime and the delivery of the message of scams and things of that have become a lot easier than they were when I did it some 50 years ago.
In the film, Catch Me If You Can, you're depicted as using pretty rudimentary techniques and kind of pioneering the field of check fraud. I imagine today much more sophisticated techniques are used.
Yeah, because of the ability today with graphic technology and things of that nature, color copiers, the ability of scanners. The one thing that hasn't changed and never will change, there is no technology today, and there never will be any technology that can stop social engineering. So the only way you prevent social engineering is through education. So back when I was 16 years old, I used social engineering with a telephone to find out where I could get a Pan Am uniform from. Today they use social engineering to find out so many other things, and they have so other means of using it through technology with computers and emails and texts and etc. So you're only going to prevent social engineering by educating people how to recognize it and how to act when they know they're being social engineered by someone.
What kinds of common social engineering schemes do you commonly see today?
Well, for example, I had a call a couple of weeks ago from a CFO of a technology company in California. They have 4,000 employees. They claim that their accounting department received an email from their CEO, their chief executive officer, saying that he wanted all the files, the W-2 files, on all of their employees so he could review them. So they sent the files up, and a couple of days later, the accounting department followed up and said, "Hope you got everything you needed. Let us know if you need anything else." And he wrote back and said, "I didn't ask for any of this." Had the person in the accounting department been taught about social engineering, they would have known that that was a very unusual request. So they would have got up from their desk, walked over, pressed the button, went up on the elevator to the CEO's office, knocked on the door and say, "Did you request this information from me?" Instead, now they have 4,000 of their employees' personal information out into the marketplace.
So no matter what new technology comes into the marketplace and into our lives, you're saying that identity theft is at its core a human-to-human interaction.
Absolutely, and that's the same with every breach. I've worked all the breaches back 15 years ago to TJ Maxx. Every breach that occurs, including Equifax, every breach that occurs because somebody in that company did something they weren't supposed to do, or somebody in that company failed to do something they were supposed to do. Hackers do not cause breaches. People do. So in the case of Equifax, they failed to update their infrastructure and their security and their patches that needed to be updated. So they allowed the hacker to access that information, and now 143 million people's information is out there for someone to misuse. So every hack, every breach occurs because someone did something they weren't supposed to do, or they failed to do what they were supposed to do.
Do you think the prominence of these digital technologies and much of our identities being stored on digital means in the cloud today, does that make us more secure or less secure and more vulnerable to identity theft?
Less secure, I think, in many cases, because we don't know all the people who are storing our information. So, you know, if we get someone who says, hey, I can for a fee store all your passwords so you don't have to remember them all, who is that? Is that a company with four employees working out of a loft somewhere, or is that a company with 4,000 employees and sophisticated technology and security and infrastructure in place? A lot of people are keeping our data that really have no security over that data. They don't update their infrastructure. They're not doing a very good job of protecting that that information. So that's the problem. Our information, including the government, I mean, we had a breach with the Office of Personnel Management. 21 million federal government employees had their information stolen. So, you know, technology is only good if you use it. If you're not using it and you're not following the right protocol to protect that information, then it's going to get in the hands of someone else.
So is the solution to this problem, Frank, a tool? Or is there a specific security measure that needs to be in place, or is it training of people in these positions, or some blend of both?
It's all about education. So this is Cyber Awareness Month. So I just came from Google. I was there on Monday and spoke to their security and privacy team about those issues. During this month, I usually go out to Fortune 500 companies and speak to their employees. But for years when I did this, I would go out to the company and I would not park in the visitor parking lot. I parked in the employee parking lot. And when I got out of my car, I emptied my pockets of memory sticks that I threw on the ground. And all of them said confidential. Then at lunchtime in their cafeteria, I would open them to see how many employees went to see what that memory stick had on it. And, of course, I had a tracing device on them and a tracking device, so they would open it and it would say, this is a test and you failed. But later I explained to them that I could have cost their company $1 billion overnight and could have ruined their 100-year-old brand. So it really is about bringing that education message to their employees on a constant basis. Whether you're the CEO or you're the janitor of the company, the number one job you have is to keep the information that's been entrusted with you safe.
All the digital security in the world isn't going to prevent an employee from putting a flash drive where they shouldn't, right?
Exactly. So, you know, no matter how many TSA officers there are at the airport, the fact is I only need to get to one of them to get through. So what is the character of the TSA officer? What is the ethics of the TSA officer? Because it only takes that weak link to make it work. And that's unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
Frank, you were brought out to Hawaii by AARP, which represents elderly members of the community. Are there certain demographics or groups of people that are more commonly targeted for identity theft than others?
Not necessarily. You know, AARP has 40 million members, and about a year ago they did a survey with Microsoft of 10,000 people, and they found that actually millennials fall for more computer scams over the telephone and over the internet than actually elderly people do. Anyone can fall for a scam. The truth is, and thank God, the majority of people are honest. And because they're honest, they don't think in a deceptive way. So when someone calls and says they're from the IRS, or their caller ID says it is the IRS or the police department, they don't know that you can manipulate the caller ID. So when they pick up the phone and someone has a lot of information about them, they truly believe that is their bank. Only their bank would know all that about them. They don't realize that on Facebook they told everyone all those things, their wife's maiden name, their children's names, where they go to school, what kind of car they drive. All of that information is available through social media, and criminals gather that information just to convince you over the phone or over the email they are who they say they are. So today you have to be a little smarter, you have to be a little wiser, and as I tell people all the time, you just need to stop and verify. The red flags are very simple. The minute I start asking you for money, or I start asking you for information like your Social Security number, date of birth, That's the red flag. You need to then stop and make sure you know who you're talking to. You hang up the phone, you pick up the phone book, you look up the Internal Revenue's number, the police department's number, your bank's number, and you call them directly and verify that information. If you just live by those two words about stop, verify, it'll save you a lot of money. There's nothing wrong with being skeptical. It's a virtue, actually, and you need to make sure you know who you're dealing with when someone wants you to part with your money.
So cultivating those instincts in the general population is going to be key to preventing this trend of identity theft.
Absolutely. You know, I've been doing this for over 40 years. Education is the most powerful tool to fighting crime. If you can educate people and explain how these scams work, then the next time they get that call, they get that letter, they get that email, they'll know exactly how to act.
And we have to go in just a minute, Frank, but where can people go to get reliable sources for that education, for training to help better prepare them for these types of attacks?
This is my third year working with AARP. About 3 years ago, they surveyed their 40 million members and asked them what their number one concern was, and they were amazed that they came back and said fraud, overwhelmingly. And so they went out to find resources and couldn't find any in government or outside of government. So they hired me to come along and help them develop what is now today the Fraud Watch Network, which allows for people, whether they're AARP members or not members, 18 years old or 88 years old, to go to the Fraud Watch Network at AARP, and they can watch videos of these scams, learn how these scams are perpetrated. I've been to 30 states on their behalf over the last 3 years, helping educate people and developing videos with them and educational material. So they've taken it upon themselves to do that. And what I like most of all, they sell nothing. There's no fee to attend. Doesn't matter whether you're a member or a non-member. They're just out there to help educate people with some obviously big concern people have about their protecting their personal fraud for being fraud and identity theft.
All right, Frank Abagnale, thanks so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you for giving us the time.
Frank Abagnale Jr. is a former con man made famous by the film Catch Me If You Can. He now runs the financial fraud consulting firm Abagnale & Associates and was in Hawaii to speak at an AARP Hawaii event.